Thanks for having me here today. I'm so impressed. You guys show up on time for church. This is something that happens only in Dallas, right? So, and thanks for the name tags. I really appreciate that. It might be helpful for some of you as well, pretending to know each other, and then suddenly you have a name tag, and you're like, oh, thank goodness, Sam came today. I finally know what that person's name is. So I'm really glad to be here. The search committee, let me just tell you, has done a fantastic job. You know, I met them. They're great people. And then as I met some of you over the weekend, it's been a great experience. They seem to just reflect your character. And I feel like I've gotten to know who you are as a church by getting to know the search team. So you guys have done a fantastic job putting that team together. And Kate and I have appreciated sort of your hospitality that you've shown us here to this weekend and over the last few weeks. Let me also just get something out of the way as we begin our sermon today, is this is not a normal sermon. And this is not a normal sermon because we're trying to get to know each other. You're trying to say, is this guy the right guy? Did the search committee find the right person? What's he like? I'm doing the same thing to you. How are they responding or not responding? Do you laugh at my jokes or not? We're checking each other out. And that's okay. That's the reality of what we have, the situation that we have before us today. And it's part of the way God has orchestrated this process, is that it is a process where we're learning from each other and we're trying to figure out what this is. The reason I think it's also great is because one of my favorite quotes about preaching is the communication of truth through personality. God uses our stories, he uses our backgrounds, he uses who we are in order to convey his character and to shape us to more and more understand who he is and how our stories are fitting into that bigger story that he's telling the whole world. And you and I are in a similar place where our stories are converging. You are looking for a new pastor, and it's a time of anxiety. It's a time of stress. It's a time of wondering, what is God doing? You know, what does this mean that Rob left and we're in this place as a congregation trying to figure out a way forward? Kate and I are in the same place. We are in this place of wondering, what is God doing? What's next? How is God working? What is going on? And because of that, I have used and come back to repeatedly this passage of Scripture that I wanted to share with you. And I'm sharing it with you not, it's because it's we need all this encouragement, that Jesus is our good shepherd, that he has a plan, his character is one of mercy, as you are named, he has a plan for growing us to more and more reflect his character, and he has a place to lead us to where we are going to flourish and know him and know what it means to be free, to be his people in his place. And so if you'll turn in your bulletins, I don't know if you call it a bulletin, different churches call it different things, but if you'll turn in your bulletin to page 7, let me just read this passage that we have before us from John chapter 10. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought them out, all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. This figure of speech Jesus used with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. So Jesus again said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they might have life and have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd He who does not own the sheep sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. But I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason, the Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I may take it up again. No one takes it up from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father. There was again a division among the Jews because of these words. Many of them said, he has a demon and is insane. Why listen to him? Others said, these are not the words of one who is oppressed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind? There's a little background to this. Jesus is talking in John chapter 10, right after something major happens in John chapter 9. This is following right on the heels of Jesus healing a man who has been born blind. And that man born blind is healed on the Sabbath. And because he's been healed on the Sabbath, the religious leaders are up in arms about Jesus violating the Sabbath in order to heal a human being who's been born blind since birth. And in this situation, Jesus is somewhat perturbed. He's annoyed. And this is really a homily about bad shepherds and what a real good shepherd looks like. Because he's standing in stark contrast to this situation where the response to his healing, to his helping, to his rescuing one of his sheep has been not rejoicing and joy and celebration about God's goodness to his sheep, but instead shepherds complaining about what has just transpired. Now, thanks for all the kids being here today, too. I appreciate that you guys are here with us. Staying here and listening to this. And let me just say, I don't know much about shepherds. Probably you guys don't know much about shepherds either. Does anybody, any kid grow up going and being a shepherd over the summer? Shepherd camp, anybody? No, me either. So probably like you, my biggest introduction to shepherds was the movie Babe. Has anybody seen the movie Babe? That's all I knew about shepherds. And so when I was thinking about this passage, I preached a similar one a few years ago, and I was wondering about shepherds and what shepherds were like. And so I did what you probably would do if you wanted to find out about shepherds or a celebrity or anything like that. Where do you go? Instagram, right, exactly. I started following some shepherds on Instagram to learn about what it's like to be a shepherd. And I follow a couple of them, and one I really love. Her name is the Running Shepherdess. She's on this little island in the UK called the Isle of Pembroke. And here's what I learned about being a shepherd from following her Instagram feed. Shepherding is really hard work. You're out in the elements all the time. You don't just get to go to work when it's nice. You don't get to go, oh, it's sunny, I'm going to go feed my sheep and forget about them when it's rainy or stormy. You have to do it every day. It's really difficult, grueling work. It's also outdoors. It's in God's beautiful place. This place where she shepherds her sheep is an incredibly beautiful place. You love looking at the Instagram pictures because you're like, ah, kind of visual solace for the soul, looking at these sheep on these beautiful hills. But you also realize she has a very deep affection for her flock. She cares for them. She knows them. You know, she has a big flock. It's a major operation. But she knows a lot of her sheep by name. She knows the different characteristics of the different herds that she has. She understands the seasons and the cycles of shepherding life. She knows that when it's time to have the baby lambs born, it's going to be all out 24/7 for weeks at a time. You also see that she is a shepherd who truly cares for what she does. It's not just a job. Over the time of following her, you begin to realize she's not doing this simply because it's her livelihood or simply because her job in accounting didn't work out. She's doing this because she really has a love for the lifestyle of being a shepherd. She just loves it. And it comes out through her feed. She shows what a good shepherd is. Kind of fills in the sketch with color and life and vitality in a way that helps me understand. And what this passage we just read does as well. It's easy for us to sort of have an image and remember from childhood Sunday school class about Jesus as a good shepherd and the felt board and the little woolly sheep and all that and sort of have warm affection for it. But it really is a tremendously challenging job that takes a lot out of the person entering into it. And Jesus here in John chapter 10 is reflecting on that. This is an account, this is his homily about shepherding, because he himself is at his core a shepherd. He cares, he loves. This is not just a job. He hasn't just come to earth because the Father sent him on a duty. He has come because he loves his people, his sheep. And when he goes and moves to rescue one of them, and the response is anger, he in turn turns to his disciples, turns to these false shepherds, and begins to teach what a real shepherd is. Here in this passage, he lays it out that a good shepherd in verses 1 through 6 initiates. The good shepherd initiates. He doesn't respond. He moves forward into the problem. We see this in verse 2. He talks about the shepherd coming, the shepherd calling, the shepherd leading in verse 4. And his flock know his voice because they've heard it so frequently. This is not somebody who just showed up one day and started taking over herd. This is somebody that has, from the very earliest beginnings of these lambs' lives, been so present that they know the voice. And when he speaks the voice, when he calls to his sheep recognize it. In the depths of their soul, they respond because they know this voice of saying, "You're mine. I love you. I care for you." The shepherd initiates. Good shepherds, like the running shepherdess, good shepherds like Jesus, get very involved in the lives of their sheep. They're not absentee landlords. They begin to smell like their sheep. They begin to get mud and dirt and blood on them from caring for their flock. They're not people who outsource the ministry to underlings and sit safe and cozy in the farmhouse while others go about the business of caring for the sheep. A good shepherd is the one who moves towards their people, who loves them passionately and is part of them. He initiates. The good shepherd also protects. Verses 7 through 10 talk about the way that the good shepherd guards and protects his flock. There's sort of a defensive posture and an offensive posture of guarding and protecting the flock. In verses 8 and following, he talks about the good shepherd protects from thieves and robbers. There's a defensive posture that the shepherd takes to those that would come and try to do ill to the flock, those that would want to come and steal and to kill, to maim, to hurt. And so the good shepherd is one who defends and moves outward against adversaries to the flock. But there's also this part of protecting that's positive and offensive, that moves not just against the enemies, but takes the flock and guides them into a place where they're safe. In verse 9, it talks about the gate. This gate is the place where the sheep are protected and safe, where they're fed and guarded, where they can relax and set down their guard because they know they're in a place of security. And Jesus is saying, I am not just a defender of the flock, I am also the one who leads my people into the sheepfold, through the gate, through myself, to this place where they flourish and thrive. Your echoes here, Jesus, when he's talking of the Psalms that we know so well, Psalm 23. Leading beside still waters, a place of flourishing, a place of grace, a place of food and rest and comfort and goodness, are part of the shepherd's ambition for his sheep, not just to protect them, but to guide and lead them to a place where they flourish and thrive and grow. And lastly, in verses 11 through 18, a good shepherd sacrifices for the flock. A good shepherd isn't just like Jesus is saying here in this story, he's not like a hired hand. A hired hand sees trouble and flees. A hired hand is, hey, this is somebody else's problem. I didn't sign up for this. That's the owner's problem. It's not my problem. Jesus is saying, the good shepherd is not a hired hand. The good shepherd is someone who owns and cares for the flock because he is united to them in a powerful bond. And because of that powerful bond, a bond of affection, of love, he's not going to let anything come against them that does not go through him. He stands as the protector, but he also stands willing to lay down, to sacrifice everything that he is in order for the benefit, the flourishing, and the growth of his people. And he does all this simply out of his sheer mercy. He's aligned himself to his sheep. The passage is not just abstract. As you know, in this part of John, Jesus is beginning to talk to his disciples. There are kind of multiple audiences going on. Jesus is challenging the leaders, the false leaders that want to mislead the people of Israel. But he's also talking to his disciples who are listening to this and recording it and remembering it later to understand what is their mission. What does it look like to understand who Jesus is? And the reason they include it, why John the writer includes it in this story of Jesus' life is really one of the most central images, is because it tells so clearly who Jesus is and why he has come. He says, I am the gate. He says, I am the good shepherd two times. Because Jesus is these things. This is what he came to do. He initiated. He came from heaven to earth to us. Not because he had to, but because he was motivated and compelled by love to protect and care for his flock. And he lays down his life on behalf of us, his people, his flock, those that he has come to die for, because he has a plan to rescue them, to redeem them, to bring them home, to put them in a place of flourishing, to bring onto the earth a new way of being human, a way that we don't have to be subject all the time to this and that destroyer, to this and that attack, but that we have a safeguard, a Savior, a shepherd who cares for us, his people. And it gives us tremendous confidence. It gives us the ability to be sheep in a world full of wolves and know we are not alone. Not only do we have other sheep to huddle with, but we have a shepherd who cares for us and knows exactly our struggles. And knows exactly the challenges we face. And even in times of doubt and trial and misunderstanding and confusion and lack of water or not quite getting where we're going, this image of Jesus as our shepherd comes to us to comfort us and to guide us and to give us a bedrock to know we are not uncared for, we are loved. So how do we operate as if this is true? Great, Sam, sounds wonderful, but I don't know if you've been listening to my life this week. I don't know if you've been reading my Instagram feed. I don't know if you've really understood what's going on with me, how do I take this and appropriate it? How do I take this in a way that begins to really produce that life, produce that confidence, produce that understanding that I have a shepherd, that I'm not forlorn, that I'm not abandoned, but I'm actually on board here? Well, some of us need to see that we have a shepherd. Some of us are here today, and you may be thinking, I'm out. If Sam doesn't preach a great sermon, I'm out of church. You know, if God doesn't speak to me somehow in the service today, I've got one foot out the door. You may be thinking, you know, I've had this experience of bad leadership in the past. I totally get this situation where I thought a leader was understanding me, and instead of truly understanding me, I got hurt. Or you could have been someone who's been bitten by other sheep in the flock, and you feel like, man, maybe there's safety outside the family of God. Maybe being a part of the family of God is more difficult than just going out to creating my own flock, going on my own journey. Or maybe you just think grass is greener somewhere else. There's a place out there that seems healthier than what I'm finding here, not in Mercy, just in generally the church. The words here of Jesus when he says, I am the gate. I am the gate. Come to those of us who struggle with those kind of thoughts. He says, the thief comes only to steal, to kill, and to destroy, but I have come that you might have life and have it to the full. There is no other gate. There is no other place to find the comfort you seek, the comfort you desire, the comfort you and I need, other than through this person of Jesus. He is not just a good shepherd. He is truly the only good shepherd. He is the one who has actually come from the Father. That's what Jesus says here. I didn't come. I have authority. I came from the Father. I have his mantle of leadership. There is no other way. This is the way. And so let me encourage you, those of us who at all times go through these seasons of doubt, to realize this really is the Good Shepherd. This really is the one we hunger for. Even in times of trial and challenge, this is the one who will give us peace. Others of us are shepherds, like myself, like others of you. We're leaders in God's flock. We're people who have been given a mantle of leadership, who've been asked to become shepherds of some way. In some ways, all God's flock is kind of funny. In God's flock, all sheep become shepherds in some way. There's a priesthood of all of us as believers that we share. Somebody looks to all of us for some sense of leadership. It's a funny kind of flock. We follow somebody, but by following that good shepherd, we become good shepherds ourselves. And others look to us and begin to follow us. And as they follow us, following Jesus, they become shepherds as well. So it's, a sense, not just a challenge to those of us who are leaders, because we're all leaders in a way in God's family. But this passage comes to us, and it challenges us to understand that we're leaders over God's flock. And that means that our leadership needs to reflect this good shepherd's character. That we can only lead as we have been led. We can't talk about things that we haven't ourselves personally experienced. And so there's a call for those in God's family, in the flock, in the household of God, to be committed to word and prayer, not as sort of checklists or to-dos, but as the place that we go to in order to hear the voice of our shepherd, to be encouraged, to be challenged, to be bolstered in our faith. Because we ourselves are going to God and asking for his help, opening our hands and receiving from his word his comfort, his grace, his guidance. There's also a challenge for us to be disciples ourselves, that we can't tell others what we don't experience. It's easy to sort of take on a mantle of leadership, just as these leaders, these false leaders that Jesus was talking to, had all the appearance of external leadership. They had the right clothing, they stood in the right places, they knew the right things to say in public, but they themselves had never had the experience of actually submitting to a good shepherd. And because of that, they did not recognize when a good shepherd showed up. They didn't understand that the good shepherd's sole purpose is to save the sheep, to rescue the sheep and bring them home, to rejoice over the returning to the fold of a lost sheep. And so that experience of knowing our own lostness and our own foundness through this great shepherd coming after us, that story that we all have of God's saving grace to us, not because we were great, but simply the shepherd came and found us. That experience propels us into our discipleship to an experience of this good shepherd that we can share with others. And it has the ring of authority when we speak from our experience. The other thing about being a shepherd in God's flock is the call to lay down our lives. You can't get around it. At the center of every part of the Christian life is a cross, is a reminder that the heart of God, his love, is a heart of self-sacrificing. That at the heart of who God is, he is willing to lay down his life on behalf of his beloved. And so there's a call to all of us as under-shepherds, as leaders in the flock and the household of God, to be willing to lay down, to sacrifice for the good of the other. It takes its form not necessarily in extreme ways, but it takes its form in everyday ways of bending your will, of willing to listen to another person, of not rushing in with your opinion, of being willing to lay down your agenda for the good of the whole. There are 1,001 ways that as shepherds of God's household, we're called to serve, to wash feet, to care for one another. Not because it's just a good thing to do, because that is the character of Jesus who has come for us as the good shepherd. He is our good shepherd because he has sacrificed for us and laid down his life for us. That is the only doorway into this life of grace, is the willingness to follow after him. Others of us are looking for help. We're tired. We're weary. Life has beat us up. We find ourselves stuck in some difficulty or trial or situation that we can't extract ourselves from. We can't figure out how to move forward. And we're just simply at this place where we're at the end of ourselves. Jesus says twice here, I think that's very important, twice, I am the good shepherd. He says it twice for emphasis. He says it twice because he's reminding those of us who are sheep, which is all of us, FYI, that we need this good shepherd. He is good not just in the abstract. He's not good for a certain subset of us. He's good for all of us. All of us need this good shepherd. And this good shepherd is available to all of us. He's freely offered to all people to look to him in faith. One of the amazing things about Jesus, his ministry, about the New Testament, about the message of the church that's gone forth from this story in Galilee to the ends of the earth, is that this is a good shepherd. Jesus himself says this in this passage. I have other flocks. I have other sheep that need to be brought into this one fold, right? He means it's not just these people listening to him at this point in history, but it's a world that he is a shepherd of. All people, all races, all nationalities, all people groups, every language. He has a passion and a desire to move towards all of us as our good shepherd and to bring us all into one family where he can protect and heal and encourage and strengthen us all under his good hand. So I tell you, I followed the running shepherdess a few months ago. She had this hilarious post. She also posts like crazy things her sheep have done. And sheep are really good at escaping the fold, just FYI. One of her main jobs is chasing down runaway sheep. It's like number one job of a sheep, run away from the fold. Number one job of the shepherd, chase after runaway sheep. And one day she shows up on this field, and she has a picture of like 12 sheep stuck between a wire fence and a rock wall. There's only about maybe a foot of space between. It's like a sheep sandwich. And so these sheep have nuzzled in to try to escape by burrowing into this place where there's no escape. And the running shepherdess has this picture, and she's like, come on, ladies, is her caption, you know, to these sheep. Come on, ladies. And there's about 190 comments on that post about how stupid sheep are and dumb sheep and ha, ha, ha. And I was looking at that, and I was thinking about this, and it became clear to me, like, oh, that's true. That's who sheep are. That's who we are. We get in these scrapes. We get in these places where we're stuck. We need a shepherd. Unfortunately, we have not just the running shepherdess. We have the good shepherd. We have Jesus who comes to us and, like the running shepherdess, laughs at us, but also releases us. He figures out a way to get us out of the scrape, out of the bind, out of the place. But as I began to think about that, I began to realize, were it not for a good shepherd, were it not for the running shepherdess, those sheep would have been toast. They would have been stuck there. They would have starved there. They would have died there. They needed a shepherd. You and I are sheep. And praise God, we have a good shepherd. We have a great shepherd. We want who releases us not just from a sheep sandwich, but releases us from the very clutches of death and hell and destruction. Who has himself dove into our world and grabbed us and brought us into his fold and calls us his own and delights over us with his joy of receiving those who were once lost back into his family as his dearly beloved children. You and I are not just sheep. We have been adopted by the Father in heaven as the very children of God because of this good shepherd, Jesus. Let's pray.